got to find a way to connect with the family business. You don't necessarily have to work for the family business, but the belonging that you get from being connected to a family business is something that you cannot get anywhere else.
Hi, I'm Luke Hanson McDonald, and welcome to Beyond the Family Business. Hi, Luke Hanson McDonald here. Welcome back to Beyond the Family Business. Today we have part two of our interview with Adarsh Shah, CEO of Foam Co. and third generation of the international Shah business family. In this episode, we focus much more on Adarsh's personal journey and what it was like working for Michael Porter's Monitor Consulting Group, as well as moving to Nairobi as a young man and ultimately working his way up through Foam Co. to take on the CEO role. You're gonna find this one super interesting. Enjoy. Where did you go to school? So you talked a bit about Upper Canada College. Where else were you educated?
After high school, I went to Cornell University in the U.S. I did an engineering degree in operations research and in industrial engineering, which at the time at Cornell was the fluff engineering degree. Everyone said it was the easiest one. So it's a mouthful, but it was good fun. And after that, I've simply just done some continuous learning courses at Harvard and Columbia, which have been fun.
That's super interesting. So you did engineering, and have you found that's been, you know, you're working in an incredibly technical industry. Obviously, there's a lot of automation in your factory. Does that engineering background often rear its head in your work environment? Like, do you find it has been a useful skill set?
100%, bro. Not the specifics of what my degree, you know. I don't use game theory in practice, although that was a great concept. I don't use much stats, but the way we're taught to think in a structured manner, I've used many times in the business to frame issues and also to come out of crises. We had a fire in our business about 10 years ago, and we couldn't have recovered without a very kind of structured and collaborative approach to finding the solution.
Interesting. Yeah, I've worked with a lot of engineers, and I'm often very envious of the thought process it teaches you, because I feel like it is incredibly useful in a wide variety of decision making and analyzing problems and things like that. So
yeah, well, I've certainly been accused of also being an engineer. So
yeah,
well, there's some negatives there.
Absolutely. So before you worked in Foam Co., you had other work experience. So could you talk about that briefly?
Yeah, I worked at a after I graduated from Cornell, I worked at a strategy consulting firm called Monitor, the Monitor Group.
Who've now been bought by Deloitte?
Correct.
Yeah.
They were acquired by Deloitte. Their claim to fame back in the day was Michael Fuller, a great business business person, and Michael Porter, the founder of the Five Forces. So these were some of the core founders. And sorry, I might be misrepresenting Fuller's first name, but
okay.
Fuller was one of the founders. Monitor was great. It was a great learning ground for me to get really my hone my skills in strategy and look at things from the bigger picture. Come out of being an engineer and being more of a business person.
Yeah, what a dramatic difference that must be going from, you know, academia engineering to consulting and strategy. I mean, those are very, very different worlds as far as one is, you know, very rigid or seems to be more rigid and rules-based. And obviously strategy, while there are some rules, you sort of have to, you know, go with the flow a lot of the time. What was that like jumping into that world?
Well, Monitor at the time had a very data-backed approach for their strategic vision. So the engineer in me loved it because, you know, a lot of what we were doing was really backed up with good data. But there was this incredible creative energy from the partners above me who were coming up with great ideas and thought processes of how to think about things, frameworks that I'd never seen before. So it was eye-opening for me from that perspective.
And have you always wanted to go back to the, like, was it always a plan to go back to the family business? Or,
yes.
Okay. And was that, you know, pressure from your parents or your family, or was that your own desire to do that?
You know, I think it was just an expectation right from the beginning as I was growing up. You are joining the family business.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you do, you're doing for the family business. Your education is, you know, how are you going to be able to use that in the family business? So there was always that expectation. And with that came a sense of duty. Mm-hmm. That I have to do something for the family. And then, you know, lastly, there was always a little bit of pressure, not necessarily from my parents, but perhaps from other family members in the family. I have this one uncle who I remember vividly saying in a large family meeting, we don't want our young family members to work outside of the family business. As soon as they graduate, we got to grab them by the his exact words.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hopefully that didn't literally happen. Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that must be a lot of pressure on a young person to hear that kind of thing. How do you feel about that? You know, that idea that your kids have to work in the family business. Is that, you know, do you want your own kids to work in the family business? Do you not care?
No, I think that it was a really handcuffing move by the family back then to have that philosophy. And we tried to take young family members and fit them into roles which they weren't necessarily suited for, nor was their was it their passion. So I've certainly, and we have seen the effects of that now, where we've lost a lot of family members because we've put them in the wrong roles and put too much pressure on them. I certainly don't want that for my children. Mm-hmm. I want them to follow their passion, whatever it might be. I think today we have a governance structure where then my kids can contribute to the family business without being working in the operations of the business. Mm. They can contribute from a governance perspective, from a cultural perspective, from a togetherness perspective. So different ways they can contribute without actually having to work in the business.
Yeah, no, my philosophy is very similar. I was lucky enough that my dad had that philosophy, but I've seen what you're talking about happen in lots of family businesses with people being forced into roles and it not really working. In some of my other episodes, I have talked about this topic before of like the burden or the duty that comes along with it. But there's also this other side to it, which for a person like me and presumably you, given you've spent so much of your time in the family business, there's also something exciting and exhilarating about for the right person being in the family business. So the one thing that I find, or I know I will find difficult, is I don't want to push my kids away from the family business either. Mm-hmm. If they want it to be part of their life, then I want to encourage them. And I was having a discussion with someone else who has young kids, and we were discussing like Tiger Woods would have never become Tiger Woods if his mm-hmm. father had not mentored him and pushed him, et cetera. You know, Sidney Crosby, same thing.
Serena Williams,
et cetera. Yeah. And so there's, you know, and I appreciate comparing super athletes may not be a perfect parallel. But my point is there is some benefit if you want it to start early and to start to get that that support early and get involved in the business early, et cetera. And actually in my life, I think because my dad was worried about that pressure, I actually didn't get really involved in the family business till I was in my 20s. And I don't want to say I regret it because I did lots of other interesting stuff. But part of me does wonder what my life would have been like had I been pulled in, you know, much younger, because I think I would have gravitated towards it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we have this phrase that we now use in our family where we call it, we need to tap the next generation on the shoulder.
Mm.
You know, in the past, there was just this through duty and expectation, you could expect young family members to join the family business. Today, we need to nurture them and tap them on the shoulder on an earlier stage because the younger generation has lots of different options available to them. So it's a situation where the family business needs the next generation more than the next generation needs the family business. And I believe that. I think that my kids don't need the family business. And I would encourage them just to be passionate about what they want to do. What they see from their parents, from myself and my wife, is just we're passionate in whatever we do. That's what I would like them to take away from watching us in the family business.
That is a great line. That's like I'll have to, you know, do one of those short TikTok videos of you saying just that. But I think that is so squarely on hitting the nail on the head that you're right. The family business needs the next generation more than the next generation needs the family business. And unfortunately, you can see that where like the number one issue with so many family businesses in the world right now is succession, because there's so few people that, you know, they're parents have, you know, a not very sexy business. Maybe it's industrial or it's, you know, the local hardware store or whatever. And the kids are going into a completely different world and they don't want to be part of that. Mm-hmm. And that business is sold off or shuts down or whatever. That's a really insightful way to sort of summarize it, which I don't know if I really thought about phrasing it that exact way. What value, you know, you got to work outside, you believe in the value of, you know, pursuing your own direction, working at Monitor Group, going to school, you know, internationally, et cetera. What do you think that brought to the family business when you rejoined?
I value those years immensely. I had a fantastic time at Monitor. It was a hardworking culture, great work ethic. It was very professional. There was also this sense of helping others as well in the Monitor culture at that time, where no matter what you were doing, how busy you were, you would always have time and make time to help somebody else in a challenge they had. And at the end of it, there was always a ton of fun that we'd have. There was always time for fun. So that is what I think I took out from Monitor and I've brought to the family, certainly the professionalism, the sense of work ethic. And probably the most important thing is the lack or a reduced sense of entitlement. You know, I think that if you join the family business straight out of school, you are more likely to have a sense of entitlement than if you've had to work professionally and prove yourself in an outside environment. So I think that's why I would always encourage that for any new person to always work outside the family business before.
Joining. No, absolutely. I think that's absolutely valid, is the humbling nature of it. So going from the world of so it sounds like it was, you know, very useful working outside the family business, but you did want to move back into the family business. Was there any major challenges going from being part of this, you know, pretty epic global consulting group to, you know, a fairly local phone business that was, you know, family member run, et cetera? I would assume
You
know, those were worlds apart as far as culture goes.
Huge culture shock for me, actually. So my last stint with Monitor, I moved from the Toronto office to the New York office. So I was living in Manhattan, consulting for a big insurance company. I just finished a strategy project for them where they were entering India, you know, the second largest country in the world, second largest insurance market in the world, potentially, through a JV, and very exciting project. And then got posted in my first job at the family business, in a small business in Nairobi, Kenya.
Oh, so you didn't go straight to PhoneCo?
No.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Crazy.
My first job with the family business, they said, all right, you're going to go to work for this small business. It was a $2 million or $3 million business in Nairobi, not even our core business in Africa. It was a very small business. I had a small mandate, small team, and I was not running the business. You know, fortunately, you don't want to thrust family members in a management position straight away. And their vision was to be for it to be a training ground for myself. So not only was it a different pace of work from what I was used to, I was used to a high level, high quality pace of work and monitor, but I went into a small business with, you know, a very, very slow pace of work in a role that really was, I was not fit for. In an environment where, you know, economic environment, which was very different than Manhattan or Nairobi.
No kidding.
But it was amazing. You know, the outside of work was amazing. You know, every other weekend I was making a trip out into the country, either, you know, climbing Mount Kenya or going to the beach or going on safari or going camping with my buddies. So from a social standpoint, it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But from a business perspective, it was not rewarding at all.
And how old were you at that time?
I was about 24, 25.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What an incredible way to spend your mid-20s in Africa. That's super cool. I've never been to Kenya. I would love to go there.
Oh, yeah.
That's definitely one of my
beautiful top country.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So there was a challenge, obviously, of going into that. And then so where did you go after that role?
So after that role, that's when I joined FOAMCO Toronto.
Okay.
And my mandate was to expand U.S. sales. So I actually was living in New Jersey, in Hoboken, New Jersey, starting a distribution facility for our foam business and mattress business
okay.
that we had in Toronto.
So not quite Manhattan, but closer than
Nairobi. Oh, yeah. I could see the buildings from from my window. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. How was that that move?
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
It was entrepreneurial. I was in charge of my own segment of the business. I was close enough to something that was familiar to me, that, you know, that energy and life that I liked from Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. But it was challenging from a business perspective, very challenging as well. I was wearing all kinds of hats at that time. So it was, that was a real learning for me because, you know, I was running this segment of the business and I had to wear every single hat from a finance to sales to marketing to operations. That was a good learning process.
And then from there, did you move back to Toronto or?
That's right.
Okay.
Then I moved back to Toronto and I took over operations. I began in sales, building the business up on the mattress side of our business, pioneering different territories. I expanded the business into Quebec, which was a ton of fun. I hadn't spoken French since high school. And I found that really fun and rewarding, just practicing in that language and it coming back to me.
Mm.
And the Quebec people were so welcoming. These retailers that I would go and call on in the middle of nowhere would be so happy to talk to me and appreciative of the efforts I was making to speak my broken French.
Oh, really? That's excellent to hear. So you got to do the rounds, so to speak. Like you really got to try a bunch of different hats on in different parts of the family business.
Yeah.
I assume that must have been just as much as your time at Monitor. That must have been a huge part of your education as well, getting to work in sales and distribution and, you know, even in Nairobi.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, I actually hadn't thought about this before, but I guess that's where the roots of it started, where I realized I liked seeing all aspects of the business. Mm. I didn't want to just be focused on one problem.
Mm.
And I didn't want to be high level on the strategic side or the finance side or whatever it might be. I like that broad-based look. And I think one thing that I do recognize now is that I like being in touch with all the people in the business at all different levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't mind rolling up my sleeves and going into the factory and helping out and figuring out a problem with foam or sewing or whatever it might be. At the same time, I love the strategic aspect. I love the M&A aspect of the business that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's probably where I discovered that broad-based look. And
that entrepreneurial challenge. Spirit that you talked about earlier on. I mean, the fact that you're willing to roll up your sleeves and you want to work with the team and, you know, be involved throughout. I think that's what an entrepreneur looks like and that's what they thrive on.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing about me is I like building stuff. And it could be a factory, or it could be a mattress. Like, it could be something small or big, but I like building things. And then I'm not necessarily great at, the making sure the structures are in place for it to be followed through. I do need a great team behind me to take these ideas and these initial structures forward.
Mm.
But I like building things.
Mm. Very cool. What has been the single biggest reward of rejoining the family business?
I think for me, it's been that camaraderie that I have with different family members all around the world. When we get together, there's just an immediate, sense of family and belonging that I have. And these people are living in Kenya or Australia or South Africa. We see each other every couple of months, not very often, speak infrequently, but there's this incredible bond that we have with each other that we know, and we know we've got each other's backs. There's loyalty, there's this love, there's a business agenda that we all are moving towards in the same direction for, I think. So that's the biggest, the most rewarding aspect of having rejoined.
So back to the dilemma of what does the next generation do, join the family or not? I guess, you were a next generation. You now have your own next generation to contend with your kids and other kids of your family. What advice would you give to the next generation as far as deciding a career path and, navigating, which, you've eloquently explained this very interesting mix of different experiences that have led you to be the leader you are today. But I'm sure, hindsight's 2020, it probably wasn't as clear of a path when you started out on that journey. So it can be daunting for sure to people. What advice would you give them?
First and foremost, follow your passion and do it in the best way you can. Put all your energies behind it. There's no shortcut to hard work. I truly believe that. So yeah, be passionate about something and follow it through properly. Then you've got to find a way to connect with the family business. You don't necessarily have to work for the family business, but find a way, because the belonging that you get from being connected to a family business is something that you cannot get anywhere else. That's what I tell my kids. Mm-hmm. Is, that is something just so rich that you've inherited, that I inherited, that's so difficult that, that we're so fortunate that we have that, others don't. So don't let that go.
Mm.
Find a way to stay connected. And you could do that through working in the family business or simply contributing in some way through the council or through governance, socially. But there's a role that you need to play in the family business for it to be rewarding and for you to get the values from the family business that we believe in.
Mm. No, that's very well put. I've definitely seen that as well, where now that I'm, in succession with my own father and the next my generation, which is only the second generation, is now in its, 30s and 40s and 50s. The role we have to play to keep the family together is becoming, it was something that we used to not really have to think about because our parents took care of it. And now it's becoming clear as something we need to grab the hold of. I was answering an email just before I got here about, making sure there's clear alignment on our philanthropic giving, so charity work, et cetera, and making sure, that we all believe in it and that it actually, it's not just done piecemeal and blindly, because it's such a good opportunity to connect us together, brings pride to the family knowing that we're giving back and doing things that we care about. Or supporting our community in ways that we care about. But, my dad was basically being like, talk to Luke, he'll, help deal with this. And so, I'm seeing how important my role and my generation's role is in that that personal side of keeping the family's fabric together.
Yeah, there is a duty that we all carry, and there's a burden that we all carry. And I sometimes feel for my elders, it's a huge burden that they carry on their shoulders. And some of them believe in the family so strongly that when they see that someone is not joining or not feeling the love from the family or doesn't see the value in the family, it's a real burden for them, challenge for them. So it's both rewarding and burdensome to have that, to shoulder that. Just so you don't, you're ready for that.
Yeah.
But what I was going to say also, I was going to say something else. It's past. Never mind.
About holding the family together, next generation.
What was it? If it comes back to me, I'll mention it again.
No worries.
Yeah.
So that's some great advice. What advice, you know, now, as I said.
I remember it. Yeah.
I just had to waste some time.
Yeah. So what I was going to say is we also have, so our family is made up of three branches, and each branch governs themselves a little bit different. In our branch, we have an investment council that looks after the central pot. So we call it the central pot that we utilize for things like togetherness. We have a social reunion every 4 years that's just about having fun and being together. But this investment council now, we've asked the next generation to participate more in all of our councils. And we have now some of them on this investment council. And some of the fresh ideas they're bringing in are along the lines of social impact investing. So I think that having the next generation involved, they not only have... it's not only good for the family, but they get this incredible opportunity to do things like social impact investing that they wouldn't have been able to get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So very, very enriching for them to stay connected.
Yeah, no, 100%. So you're, as I said, you're third generation. You now have a fourth generation. So you're, you know, wearing both hats, both having been the next generation and also now having a next generation coming up. What advice do you give to other, What advice do you give to other leaders who are trying to bring in the next generation? So you gave great advice to the next generation of how to think about it. What advice do you give to me? You know, I have two beautiful young daughters. They're very young, but how should I be thinking about trying to get them engaged?
Great question. I think that first and foremost, them seeing you be passionate about what you do, giving them exposure to what you do, is the number one thing to get them interested in the family business. Seeing your passion for it, I think also showing them vulnerability and showing them the challenges that you go through is super important, because then they also see the other side of that, you know, which is the fulfilling aspect of coming around on the other side. So, you know, I think as leaders, sometimes we forget that we got to show vulnerability. And I think showing that to our children, it makes it more human and it makes it less challenging for them to join the family business. The sense of, the expectations become less high. They're not worried about failing as much anymore when they've seen that you don't have to be, and not everything has to go right. There are things that go wrong. So you set a very challenging path for your kids sometimes. We all do, I think, when we show them what we want. But I think by being vulnerable and telling them about our challenges, it makes it easier for them to follow that path.
No, I think that resonates with me a ton. I have failed innumerable times on my path so far, and I'll continue to make mistakes as I go along. And, you know, my dad has, luckily for me, when I've had some pretty epic failures, has reminded me that, like, you know, the only way you really learn is by making mistakes. Mm-hmm. And now having made some some big mistakes myself. That's absolutely true. And it's not about, you know, I think, unfortunately, my generation and I believe the generation below me, social media especially sometimes shows almost this like too perfect view of the, you know, the classic started a tech company and they were a billionaire by the time they're 25. Mm-hmm. And this like idea that it's a sprint to make, you know, $100 million and then it's over. When in reality, anybody that is, or most people that are successful in business, it's a marathon of tenacity, of, you know, peaks and valleys and many mm-hmm. failures and lessons over time. And anyway, so your point is, I think, absolutely true, is that making sure your kids don't have this black and white view of I can be a failure and then I need to give up versus that's all part of it. I'm going to fail.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm going to become successful.
Yeah. And I think what goes hand in hand with that is also forgiveness. Mm-hmm. As leaders, I think we have to, you know, if there is a failure along the way, we cannot reprimand them for that failure. There has to be forgiveness in everything that we do. And the sense that they're not alone in that failure. I think what we can do as leaders is make sure that as the next generation comes up, that there are others there that are failing together with them or succeeding together with them, making sure that it's not all on their shoulders. It's not a single-handed approach that is making it a success or a failure.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the worst things that can happen in a family business is when someone tries to push the envelope all on their own and then fails and then is labeled in a certain way.
Mm.
And in a family business, it's very difficult to have a resurrection of your image.
Mm.
Especially if you plan on working in the family business forever or being wanting to contribute forever for the rest of your life, you want to be able to, you know, refresh or rejuvenate
resurrect
your character.
Yeah.
Every time.
No, that's, you know, what I would expect from a Jane Monk is your name.
The cycle of rebirth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we've got 5 minutes left. Last question, not to leave it on too, you know, massive of a question, but where do you see your generation leading the family business next? What's the future of the Shaw family business look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's going to look very different. I think that we're not going to be operators in the business. I think we're going to learn how to be good owners of the business or the businesses. Potentially, there's an equal likelihood is that there may not be a family business. We may have to find alternative ways of staying together, which is the most important thing, I think. It's not the continuation of a business for the purpose of income or the purpose of dividends. I think that's not, for me, the main criteria or main goal for the next generation. For me, it would be maintaining that togetherness.
Mm.
So what holds them together? In the past, it was business that held us together as a family.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, it need not be that. Could be philanthropy, could be social impact investing, it could be, anything, a number of other things. But, that's the number one goal for me.
Yeah, it's that togetherness that you talked about before.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, that is the main thing that when I've seen family businesses that have fallen apart on a personal level, I don't necessarily mean, you know, just financially, it's when they've lost sight of that togetherness and the importance of keeping that togetherness. And as you so eloquently put it, that's the greatest value of this, is that camaraderie. And what a shame it is if you lose sight of that and that, you know, that the benefit that it can provide and you know, the role that everybody has in keeping that, the stitching together on that fabric. So,
I mean, you know, when we talk about wealth, that's where the wealth is. Mm-hmm. It's not in actual dollars. It's not in the numbers in the bank account. It's in that togetherness.
Mm.
So, you know, how do we sustain that wealth and keep that together? That's the end goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Well, I really appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you very much.
Just as interesting as I thought and more. So I really appreciate it. And yeah.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. I'm Luke Hanson McDonald. This was Beyond the Family Business. Please review and subscribe. Thank you very much. Talk to you next time.